Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
There's no doubt that Irish farmers are kind of having it tough at the moment. And we only have to look at the average age of an Irish farmer, the average wage of an Irish farmer, to see that obviously it's an occupation that's in turmoil. And one of our proud, we should be really proud of our Irish farmers because they've done us so much good in this country over the last God knows how many years. It's one of our biggest exports, of course, is dairy and meat and everything else along that goes with it. But this time of the evening, I want to welcome our special guest. My guest tonight is here to talk about the issues facing farmers in Ireland. And there's been a lot of talk in the news recently about the Mercosur deal, which is a trade agreement, by the way, between the EU and South American countries, which allows for increased imports of South American beef, which Irish farmers fear will flood the market with cheaper, potentially lower standard meat and undermine local production and threaten livelihoods. Another strain on the Irish farmer is the tightening of the derogation rules. Derogation rules had allowed Irish farmers to apply for permission to spread more nitrogen, pardon me, from livestock manure than EU limits typically allow. Now, this has caused upset amongst the Irish farmers as stricter limits reduce the amount of livestock that they can actually keep without breaching environmental regulations, threatening the viability of many family farms. Joining me is Gerard Manny, who is the regional chair of the Irish Farmers Association, and he also joins me to discuss that, along with much more, and how Irish farmers are managing these challenges. Gerard, hi, how are you?
Very good, Niall. Thank you for having me on this evening.
Before I get to the Mercosur deal and everything else, you know, farming in Ireland has become a huge challenge, not only because of all this, and I'm going to come to all that, but it's because the young people on the farm, they don't want to take the farm over. So farmers invariably are getting older. Their pay is not very good. What's the average wage of an Irish farmer? Probably £35,000-£39,000 max per year. I don't know, depending on who you are.
If you were lucky.
If you're a dairy farmer, maybe. So are those challenges in itself, detrimental to the farming industry in Ireland?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you make a very good point there. I mean, If your average age is into the 60s, you're really in trouble, because what's happening is, obviously, as you look, I mean, if you're in your 20s, if you've got to say you've done your green cert or your ag science degree in UCD or wherever you've gone, you're a very marketable proposition to a lot of ag food companies, chemical companies, who will pay you 50, 60 grand a year starting off. So
you'll never have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to milk a cow for it.
Absolutely, yeah. Or look at the back end of an animal. But your parents then are on the farm. They're trying to make a wage and make a living from that farm. And when you are in the prime of your life, that's when you're looking at marriage and you're looking at kids and you're looking at mortgages. And everyone will tell you, and you know that yourself, it's impossible. It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the huge challenges, because one of the things that we've pushed for the incoming government is to look at a proper scheme that allows farmers to retire, certainly in the 70s and 80s. And you have a lot of those that have nobody in mind or no will either. To leave that leave the land on to somebody else, to give them some sort of dignity, some sort of a payment, to take them out off the land, and allow younger people who have, shown an interest and are qualified, let them have the land and let them farm.
What are the biggest challenges then facing the Irish farmer today? I mean, look, we mentioned a few minutes ago the Mercosur agreement, and indeed, if that's ratified, that could be very detrimental to the farming industry in Ireland. Now, I've heard that some people have suggested there could be some positives out of it as well. I don't know whether there's more opportunities for Irish farmers under the agreement to get increased exports to South America, for example. I don't want to make it all sound one-sided, but it could be detrimental to the Irish industry.
Yes. So I suppose, Mercosur is kind of really showing us how the EU works, really. The German automotive industry are on their knees for a while, and the big players, the French, the Italians, the Czech Republic, anywhere where there's a big automotive industry, will be absolutely delighted to be able to move diesel engine cars and trucks down to South America. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the quid pro quo will be beef as one of the many products and chicken into Europe. Now, in some respects, it's already happening. There's a small amount there at the moment.
Yeah, going into some of the stores. Yeah.
But where the real issue, and like farming has been under the cosh of the environmentalist for a number of years now, there is no traceability in South American beef. In Brazil, the cattle don't have to wear an ear tag. So 30 years ago, hormones, growth hormones, were banned in the EU. They're still using them in South America. So if somebody,
how is that deal even possible when you've got strict regulations in most European countries in relation to the production of beef, and these regulations which come down heavy on Irish farmers, and yet we're now allowing a deal which allows beef to be imported from South American countries with little or no regulations? How is that even possible? Because that really undermines everything that Irish farming is all about.
Yes, that's the question that I would love to hear answered. It doesn't matter. People will tell you that there will be, you know, there'll be checks. We all know what checks will mean. You know, if one person is looking at 25,000 ton of beef, they're not going to look at every single label.
No, they're not.
So let's be very clear and about that. That this, like, we are buried in paperwork now. Absolutely, there is more of an industry in inspection and paper handling within the department than there is actually the people actually doing the work on the other side. So doesn't add up.
Yes, and the amount when my steak hits the table on a Sunday afternoon or whatever it is, or my roast beef hits the table, the amount of people who are now making money off that piece of beef, be it inspectors, be it the shop that it sold to, the abattoir that it came from, the processing company that posted, the people who packed it, because now we know that most stores don't have butchers anymore, right back to the farmer who gets very little for it. So realistically, there's too many people making money off it.
Yes, 100% correct. And I mean, we now have a food regulator. I mean, okay, we're going a little bit off the beam here, but the food regulator was put there, and the question that farmers have asked the food regulator, please tell us what percentage every single player in the, from the farmer to the place, as you say, tell us the percentage that each person in that chain is getting. And we still are waiting for that answer. Mm. We're still waiting for that answer. But this goes back, as I said, to the Mercosur deal. Like, Brazil are taking out the rainforests at a rate of knots. And we're told that the Mercosur deal in 5 years' time, that they will have to stop cutting down rainforest and for the Mercosur deal to work. You know, they've got a 5-year window. You can imagine how much, if they get the go ahead, how much they will cut down to try and get ahead.
They're cutting it down anyway to grow soya because of the increase in being vegan.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they've shown little or no regard. And this is, I suppose, that's probably one of the stones in the shoe of Irish farmers, in that we have probably one of the greenest and best countries at grass-fed beef and dairy. And yet people, you know, kind of ignore what's happening in South America. You know, let burn, baby, burn, Mr. Trump would say, drill, baby, drill.
I mean, the other, I suppose, nail in the coffin, if that's what you want to call it, is the EU nature restoration laws. I don't know if you anticipate any challenges, you know, with rewetting peatlands or other land restoration requirements outlined in the laws. That's going to have another huge impact on farmers. It just seems to be one nail in the coffin after the other, doesn't it?
Yeah. I suppose...
I'm not saying these things are all a really bad thing, by the way, but I'm just saying it just adds more problems and regulations.
All of these issues, you see, have come down the line without proper consultation.
But without money for the farmer. They talked about subsidies for the farmer when they brought in the restoration laws, but they said, oh, we don't have any money set aside for the farmers on this. You know what I mean?
That's right. But if you and I were neighbours, neighbouring farms, and you decided that you were going to nature, and we say we both lived in the Midlands, in Offaly or Westmeath or Roscommon or wherever, and you said, "Okay, I'm going to take the nature restoration. I'm going to take the money that's offered, and I'm going to re-wet whatever land I had reclaimed over the last, or my father or mother had reclaimed over the last 40 years. Can you explain to me, as your neighbour, how the water's going to stop rising on my farm if you allow it to rise on yours, as we're next door neighbours? And this is the point.
Let's build a dam.
You know, the government have said that Bord na Mona and all the forestry service, that they have enough land to cover the actual amount that's required. But anyone that has land anywhere near them, the water level is going to affect them. So it's one of these things that somebody's kind of said, oh no, sure, the water will stop at the edge and it won't go any further because we've told it not to, you know.
Yeah. So what's the future for the Irish farmer? I mean, somebody said to me the other day, the Irish farmer will be, in 10 years' time will be growing, they'll be keeping mealworms because there's this kind of push to get rid of red meat. And by the way, I've seen that, you know, the kind of vegan fad, it seems to be taming down now and reversing again. So people are going back to red meat. And thankfully for the Irish farmer, they're going back to red meat again.
Yeah. But I suppose I'll give you a slightly personal story in this part, in that I had 8 brothers and sisters, and we were on a double-digit farm in acres, so it's not a big farm at all. But 40 years ago, we would have had barley, wheat, oats. Now, wheat would have been ground for wheat, oats would have been ground for feed. We would have had sugar beet, because it gives you sugar pulp for cattle and cows, and also you get a very good payment during the winter. We would have had 2 pigs, and then they would have been raised for pig meat. We would have had 4 or 5 sheep. We had 14 or 15 cows always for milk, butter, and again, for sale. Hens, ducks, all of those things were on this farm. And all 8 of or 9 of us, I should say, all went to third level education off that farm. Now, if that's not diversity, I don't know what is, but I can guarantee you, my children, 4 children, are going through the process at the moment of third level education. I could not afford to do that.
Yeah.
It's simply not there. I mean, I have cattle and I have crops, I tillage.
Yeah.
That's what I do. But that's the diversification that was on every farm 20, 30 years ago, has been taken away by the fact that people cannot live on what they were doing.
And do you find it hard, as a farmer yourself, do you find it hard to keep up with all the new sustainable practices and, you know, complying with the environmental regulations and all of this?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, again, one of the things I did when my kids were small, every Sunday we would have gone for walks in Johnstown Castle or John F. Kennedy Park. And I train my kids to pick up acorns and beech seeds, all of which I've sowed over the last 30 years on the farm. So I sow about 100 trees a year myself that I grow from seed. And I've always done it. I love it. But I cannot see how anybody can survive. And to a level, like, I mean, we all, you know, some people survive on 3 holidays a year. You know,
more
people survive on.
Don't think there's many farmers going on 3 holidays a year, but yeah.
On spa weekends.
Yeah.
I'm talking about basic survival is almost impossible without having off-farm income now.
Yeah, there was an old adage years ago, there's no such thing as a poor farmer. I think that's completely gone now, to be honest with you. But
you see, it's a classic, because it's like everything else. If you have 100 acres now, you're worth at least €1 million.
Yeah.
So as a farmer, and most farmers, now it has changed a lot, but all the older generations that we're talking about, they have no formal education. So what do they do? So if you sell your farm and your and the house that's with it, you go live in a caravan and live off that million. You know, people have this added, you know, land is worth money, but it's not worth anything to you if you don't have it.
And
so
where,
it's not cash in the bank.
So getting back to the future of farming in Ireland, and I don't know which government party you believe is the best for support. I don't think it's going to be the Greens, you're going to be saying to me. Well, they're nearly gone anyway. There's only one of them there now. What support do you believe the kind of farmers need, you know, from the next government, the incumbent government, which I believe is probably going to be Fianna Fáil again, a few independents? you know, to remain competitive and sustainable and to be able to fight their way through all these EU regulations. So what supports are they going to need? And are they going to, do you think they're going to get them in the next 5 years?
That is a very interesting one. And I suppose the one thing you mentioned on your list there was acres. Like acres was a kind of an environmental support. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was more support than environmental. Mm-hmm. But, the scheme, they had 2 years to actually come up with a new scheme. COVID hit and they sat on their hands. And then it was a rushed scheme was brought in. And a lot of people, because of the older schemes had all finished, people jumped at it. And, you know, it's almost incredulous because I worked for almost 20 years for Hewlett-Packard as an engineer, believe it or not, back in the day. Mm-hmm. The excuse that they're still using is that there's a computer issues with payments after 2 years.
But I can honestly tell you,
Niall, that there's nobody in the Department of Agriculture or any other department up in Dublin actually didn't get paid at Christmas because of a computer glitch.
Yeah. Well, you should know, Ger, as well as I do, even being head of the association, you should know getting any payments from the government can take an awful long time. Mind you, if you owe them money, it has to be paid immediately. But if you're waiting for any kind of payments back from them...
Absolutely correct. And
you don't rely on
and
it.
And possibly a fine as well. If they don't feel in a generous mood.
Yeah, we should. Maybe that's a new rule we should bring in, actually, in the future. That when the government owe you money and you don't get it in time, that we should be able to fine them and give them a penalty.
But this is the point. This is the quid pro quo. If you and I sign a contract and you're the government and I'm the farmer, and I sign a contract with you that I will do X on my farm in environmental, whatever schemes I take on, and that you say, right, well, there will be income foregone because you're going to have to pay for some part of it yourself. And I'll say, fine, I will do that if you pay me. And then year one, you haven't paid me. Year two, you haven't paid me. Like, you know, if they come out and inspected my farm and I haven't done what I said I do, I would be fined. I would be fined. So how come it doesn't work in reverse when they actually haven't paid with the work that's done?
I know, and you know, it is tough, and I don't know an awful lot about farming, but I have to be honest, I feel so sorry for the Irish farmer, because the Irish farmer is famous. We're famous worldwide. No matter where you go in the world, people are well aware of Irish meat and how good it tastes. And I've been to many countries in the world and I've never tasted anything like an Irish steak anywhere in the world. You will only get it in Ireland, and the same with dairy products as well. We will only get that taste in Ireland. And I just believe we're letting them down. Do you think the fact that the Green Party are well, they're gone out of government now. Do you think that's going to make a difference? Will that help?
I do believe it will. I've debated with the members of the Green Party over the last year between the local, national and European elections. And some of them have very good ideas and some of them have very good and, you know, our forward thinking. But like the nature restoration law, which you referenced earlier, like that was brought in a rush without somebody actually thinking it through to whom it's going to affect most.
But the Irish MEPs voted for it.
Yes, they did. Yes, the whip was full there. Yeah,
some of the ones that voted for it were re-elected again in rural Ireland. Which blows my mind, because as you know, I ran for the European elections. So, indeed. I wouldn't have voted for it.
You got to the final hurdle. But that's the point. Like, I mean, as a country, we tend to give ourselves very little options when it comes to our own political masters. And it's something that people have to look at, because I suppose... farming, you know, and I say this to a lot of people, and I do a lot of talks on mental health and issues like that as well, that go hand in hand with this. Like a farm is not a piece of ground. It's not a slab. It's a living organism that has a family growing and being raised on it, just the same as every other
family. Oh, it's like an institution. That's what it is.
And every move and every rule and every new thing that you bring in affects how that works. You know, it's something that people kind of forget. A farmer is not just a bottle that stands in the middle of the table. It's a living, breathing person that has feelings, that has has a husband or a wife and kids and is trying to do their best. You know, we've kind of, unfortunately, the pandemic allowed a lot of people who had 100 or 1,000 likes on their account, allowed them to become experts in something that really they knew nothing about. And I suppose, as you say, and you've rightly said it, the tide has turned, because even in Europe, you can see they're looking at now, they're looking, you know, they were all about the environment. But, you know, as people say, you can't lick the bark of a tree and be feel satisfied. Well, maybe some people can. But anyway, neither here nor there.
Well, look, just finally, because I've only got a couple of minutes. Sorry, I've only got a couple of minutes.
Food security is a huge, huge issue. And it is now. And we have to, we can gross, like, literally the best products in the world. We should be looking after those that grow it, especially on our own island.
In relation to the new foot and mouth case that's in Germany currently at the moment, is there a fear that could be like the, what was it, 2001? When was that? When was the foot and mouth last? 2002, was it the last time?
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a different, you know, even from our point of view, it's got a different feel to it, in that it's in water buffalo.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of a closed herd that was in a kind of a park. There's 20 of them.
Right, so you're not going to see us all dipping our feet in water again and mats all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I mean, if it was in a commercial herd of cows or calves or beef, yes, the alarm bells would be going off immediately. Mm. But I think that they've got a serious handle on this immediately, which is fantastic. And I would certainly hope. But now, you know, like the avian flu is the other one that's going around, where they found a bird that flew from England into Ireland, you know. And so we're subject to all sorts of restrictions now. Like, it's incredible. If you go down there, there's midges, this thing called blue tongue that sheep get and beef cattle that can kill them. It comes from a little midge. You know, little flies.
Yeah, like a bite, an insect bite.
So it's in the UK. Last week, they will not survive under plus 12 degrees. So, like, last week, they would have been killed off. But if we got an easterly breeze with, you know, plus 12, we could end up with a huge infection. And, you know, you've got the bark beetle in Scotland that's now looking to eat all the pine forests. So there's always
your hands are full. And I suppose the final thing is, you know, something that you wanted to mention as well, which were the sheep kills and also the illegal hunting on the farmlands. You know, sheep kills, are they on the increase? You know, the dogs, out of control dogs, basically.
Yes, sadly they are.
You'd imagine people would have more responsibility when it comes to keeping their dogs, wouldn't you?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, there was a case early last year in the Midlands where a couple went on holidays with two Alsatians. The Alsatians were left out the back, and a bag of food was thrown in a porch that they could go into and eat out of.
Wow.
And they killed quite a number of sheep across several miles. You know,
the illegal hunting.
People should not have animals. They should never be allowed to have a gerbil, let alone dogs. Dogs need to be looked after. They're fabulous animals. But there are so many people out there who just don't care. It's very sad.
And it's
one of the things I would say, like, we have fines and whatever else. But I personally believe, and I can be wrong or you can be right, I think the person who owns the dog that killed the sheep should be sent out to clean up the mess.
I couldn't disagree with you.
Then they'll understand the physical and emotional stress and distress they've caused on the family.
Well, look, I'm not going to have time to get into the illegal hunting now. Unfortunately, I've run out of time. But I tell you what, we'll come back to it again. Maybe you can pop back on with us again, because I have a lot more we can talk about.
I'd love to.
Gerald O'Mahony, Regional Chair of the Irish Farmers Association. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. And good luck to the Irish farmers.
Thank you,
salute to the Irish farmers. Wonderful bunch of human beings. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Ger. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome indeed.
It is kind of sad, isn't it, to see all these challenges for the Irish farmer who once had it easy, but because it's always been hard work for the Irish farmer. It's a tough job. I wouldn't like to be a farmer. I wouldn't be getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning milking cows and feeding calf and, you know, putting my hand up cows' arses and all sorts of things. I mean, I bet you wouldn't do it.
for the money they're getting for doing it, because believe me, they don't make a huge amount of money. And remember, as I said earlier on, that steak in your plate, by the time it gets to your plate, it's gone through about five or six different people and companies. The packers, the processors, the abattoirs, the shop, the, you know, the Tesco's or wherever it happens to be that you bought it from. And everybody's getting a cut out of it. It's no wonder it's got so expensive. The poor old Irish farmer's getting very little for it. When I say poor old Irish farmer, some of them are making okay money, but they're getting very little out of it. Anyway, listen, thank you to everybody who got involved in the show tonight. I should talk to you again tomorrow night. Enda Murphy's on the way with some nice love songs. Until tomorrow night at 9, have a great day.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.